Then I spot the reason we're all here. A fit-looking man in a Berkeley polo shirt, holding a clipboard, furiously taking notes. A stopwatch around his neck. He looks up and notices me noticing him. I give him a smile and a thumbs up. His lips curve up almost imperceptibly, but I take it as a good omen anyhow.
Next up, the last event of the day, the finals of the men's 200-meter freestyle,
the announcer booms. His voice bounces off the tiled walls. Cheers erupt in the stands. The place feels completely electric. The swimmers file out and take their places next to their respective starting blocks. I silently bemoan the fact that everyone looks the same in their Speedos, swim caps, and goggles. I crane my neck trying to figure out which guy is Charlie. He texted me earlier that he'd be swimming in lane one, but that can't be right. The block is empty. Charlie's parents clutch at each other. Dad turns to me and raises his eyebrows. I shrug and shake my head like, I have no idea. He's supposed to be there. Berkeley man stops writing and glances down at his watch and then back up impatiently. I hold my breath. And then, like magic, there he is. Charlie looks so powerful, so strong, so goddamn good. I want to jump out of the stands and throw my arms around him. The other swimmers are splashing water on themselves, shaking the nervous energy out of their arms and legs. But Charlie just stands there, looking cool, calm, and collected. He grins at his mom and dad. He keeps searching the stands with his eyes, looking through bleacher after bleacher. My dad finally lifts his hand and points down at me. I push the hoodie off my head. Dad doesn't object this time, and wave. Charlie breaks into a huge smile and pats his heart. I pat mine. It's our new code. Amor vinceth omnia. Love conquers all. Charlie nods. He's ready to go now.
Set, the announcer rumbles.
The swimmers get into position.
Beep!
And they're off. The competitors spend most of the first lap underwater. I'm breathless just watching, so I can't imagine how they must feel. Suddenly, they all break to the surface. The graceful silence is replaced by water churning beneath determined arms and legs. To me, it seems like all the swimmers are in a tie. It's still anyone's race. Charlie's parents grip each other's hands. The Berkeley coach looks up at the clock on the scoreboard, then back at the pool. The swimmers head into lap number two. The guy in the lane next to Charlie starts pulling ahead. Everyone else stays in a tight clump behind him. I stick two fingers into either side of my mouth and whistle as loudly as I can, trying to motivate Charlie to go faster, faster. The swimmers flip, turn, and rocket into the third lap. The guy in the lead puts even more distance between himself and the rest of the pack. Come on, Charlie, I think. This is your big chance. Give it everything you've got. Your future depends on it. One lap to go. Charlie is still behind. In third, or maybe even fourth place. I leap to my feet and start screaming, cheering as loudly as I've ever cheered for anything in my life. I hope he can hear me. I know how many hours he's been putting in to get back into shape. I know he's done everything he can to prepare for this moment. I know he can do it. And then I see it. He's surging. He knows he can do it too. Charlie's arms pump harder, harder. He glides through the water. He's coming on strong, coming up fast. He passes the guy in third place, and then the one in second. But there's still too much space between him and the swimmer in first. Winning now seems close to impossible. But Charlie just keeps on gaining. And then it happens. His hand touches the wall before anyone else's. He won! I keep screaming. That race was probably the most exciting thing I'll ever witness. Totally worthy of getting horse over. Charlie pulls himself out of the pool, shoulders and biceps and abs rippling. Then he takes off his goggles and heads for the stands. I can't help myself. I go running down the bleachers toward him, toward the light. Dad follows on my heels.
Stay clear of the sunny spots, Katie, he reminds me.
I stop short of where Charlie is standing. The Berkeley coach grabs him for a quick talk, then heads out the door. I start toward Charlie again, but then his parents intercept him. So Dad and I hang back, waiting. Finally, Charlie breaks free from all the well-wishers and scoops me up in a hug.
You are so good, I yell.
He puts me back on the ground and beams at me.
I was, wasn't I?
You really were. What did the Berkeley guy say?
He said he was impressed and would be in touch.
I beam back at him.
In touch is good.
I'm so proud of you. My dad nudges his way between us, giving Charlie a hearty wallop on the back.
I guess the rumors about you are true, he says. Congrats, Charlie. You are a maniac in the pool.
Thank you, Mr. Price, Charlie says. Thanks for letting Katie come.
My dad looks down at me and smiles.
She wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Charlie's smiling at me, too.
Mr. Price, would you mind if I borrowed Katie tomorrow night?
I put my hands together and give Dad a cute look, like I'm begging him to say yes. He finally nods.
I think that'll be fine, Charlie.
After one last hug, I pull my hoodie tightly over my head again, and we make a break for the car. It seems that everyone else did the same, though. The parking lot is jammed. 5 minutes later, Dad hasn't even backed out of the space. I'm staring out the window, exhausted from the outing. I'm so glad I was here to witness Charlie's success. But all I can think about now is getting home and going to bed. I'm just about to nod off when I see Charlie and his parents leaving the building. He runs up to our car and puts his palm up against the blacked-out backseat window. I put my hand against his from the inside. I'm pretty sure he can sense I'm there. Mr. Reed taps on the front window, and my dad rolls it down.
I just want to tell you and your daughter how much your support has meant to Charlie, he says.
I yell, "Same!" from the back seat, even though I'm pretty sure he can't hear me.
He's a wonderful young man, my dad replies.
And by all accounts, your Katie is wonderful too,
Mr. Reed says. I wish I could get out and meet him now, but the sun is shining high overhead at the moment. Too risky, even though I've already been exposed.
I just wanted to tell you how happy I am our kids found each other, Mr. Reed continues. There are a few people or moments in a person's life that change our story. She'll leave her mark on him forever, and him on her, even though it's not meant to last. As I told Charlie, all you can do is be grateful for the experience, and be grateful she came into your life.
I whip out my phone and text my dad. Tell him amor vincet omnia. My dad pauses, looks down at his phone, then looks back up and laughs.
Katie wants you to know that love conquers all, he tells Mr. Reed.
Mr. Reed laughs along with him.
Well now, I do believe that's the truth,
He taps the back window next to where Charlie and I are virtually holding hands.
Be well, Katie.
I pat my heart and press my palm against Charlie some more.
Amor vincit omnia, I think. Love conquers all.
Chapter 23. Charlie picks me up the next night, right on time. I have on another new outfit, ordered online with my dad's blessing. I did my hair and put on makeup carefully, painstakingly. It's getting harder and harder to do even the simplest things lately, but I don't want to miss any chance I might have left to look and feel young and beautiful and alive. My dad snaps another prom picture of us before we leave, and I don't even protest this time. I don't even feel embarrassed. I just try to feel grateful for the experience, like Mr. Reed said we should. The anxiety that seems to be with me every waking moment lately fades into the background. It's just a little hum instead of a huge shriek. Charlie holds the door to his truck open for me. I climb in. My dad waves goodbye to us from the front porch. My hands are trembling in my lap as Charlie hops into the driver's seat. I try to shove them under my legs to hide my shakiness, but he reaches over and takes my hands in his. Then he brings my fingers up to his mouth, kisses them individually, then places my hands back into my lap. I give him a little smile. He's the only one who could take the awkwardness out of a moment like this. His being so kind doesn't make my situation any easier to accept, but it does make me realize how lucky I am to have him in my life. I settle back into my seat, psyched to find out whatever Charlie has up his sleeve this time. We pull into the parking lot of a nondescript warehouse-looking place half an hour later. I start smiling and can't stop.
Another pop-up concert? You really think I'm that uncreative?
He says, shaking his head.
Wrong. Come on, you'll see.
I'll see what? I ask, following him excitedly.
You'll see when we get there.
Charlie leads me into what looks like the Starship Enterprise's control room. There's a huge mixing console the size of a car, with zillions of buttons and levers on it, plus multi-track recorders and digital workstations. Beyond the glass in this room is a studio, complete with musicians getting their instruments ready to perform. I take it all in. I can't believe I get to see an actual recording happen tonight. It's like a dream come true. Who are we here to see?
Oh, you mean those guys?
Charlie asks, flicking a thumb in their direction.
They're here for you.
A cool bearded dude approaches us before I can even begin to process what Charlie has just said.
You, Katie? Let's do this.
Oh my God, no, no, no. My eyes get huge and I have the sudden urge to go plan a fake cat funeral. I make a break for the door, but Charlie blocks it.
Yes, 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 yes.
How did you, what are, this is crazy, I stammer. How are we paying for this? Charlie shrugs.
Don't worry about it.
This can mean only one thing. He basically just spent his life savings on me. Money he worked so hard for this summer, and the summer before that, and the summer before that. I know how much a professional recording costs. Way too much. I'm overwhelmed by his generosity. Tears, which are always close to the surface lately, start pooling in my eyes.
Charlie, no! That's your truck money! You worked so hard for it! I can't let you do this!
It's already done, he says, grinning at me. Besides, most colleges don't let you have a car on campus as a freshman.
Berkeley called?
I say, reaching out and putting a hand to his cheek.
Not yet, he says, but I'm feeling pretty confident they will.
I'm really, really proud of you, I tell him. Whether it's at Berkeley or somewhere else, you're going to set this world on fire someday, Charlie Reed.
And you already are, Katie Price, he tells me. Now go, do this. You helped me figure out my dream. It's payback time.
He starts pushing me gently toward the studio. I stop him and hold up my hands. They're shaking. I can't play anymore, I whisper, my stomach a hot pit of fear and shame. He takes my hands in his and stares into my eyes.
Just sing. Pretend it's just me.
I nod and try to tap into all the positive vibes he's sending me. He spins me around and pushes me toward the studio. I step through the door into the center of the room. I feel unsure and nervous. I guess I can blame my shaking on that instead of the real reason. Then no one has to feel sorry for the poor dying girl and lie to her about how great her song is if they don't really think so. Maybe I'll finally get some honest feedback from real musicians, people who really know talent. The guys in the band nod hello as they finish tuning their instruments. The engineer clicks on the speaker from the other room.
Whenever you're ready, Katie, let's lay one down.
I'm ready now, except for one thing. The song choice. I have no clue what I'm supposed to sing. What are we playing? The guitarist, a tattooed, pierced linebacker of a guy, hands me the sheet music everyone in the studio has. I read the title. Charlie's Song. This is my song. I've been working on this, I exclaim, almost to myself. I look up to see Charlie smirking at me through the window of the control room. How did you get this? Charlie clicks the speaker on.
I stole your notebook again. You wrote this song? The guitarist asks.
He looks like he doesn't quite believe me when I nod.
Not bad, he says with a smile.
I smile back at him and put on my headphones. The drummer counts off a beat, and the band starts playing. My song. Charlie's song. It sounds even better than I ever imagined it could. Music swells around me, and then it's time for me to come in. I step up to the screened mic. I start to sing, softly at first, but with every note, I gain a sense of confidence I didn't even know I had in me. I close my eyes and sing for everyone I love. I picture my dad developing awesome photos from an exotic trip he takes not too far off in the future. Morgan and Garver still together, even after they head off to different colleges in the fall. Charlie gliding effortlessly through the pool at Berkeley, racking up just as many records there as he did in tiny little Purdue, Washington. And my mom, playing her favorite song by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I have walked alone with the stars in the moonlit night. I have walked alone, no one by my side. Now I walk with you, with my head held high. In the darkest night, I feel so alive. When the song ends, I know I've nailed it. Charlie is watching from the control room, recording it all with his iPhone. He nudges the engineer, who nods. Do I even see amazement in their eyes? Because I'm amazed at what just came out of me, too. On the ride home, Charlie and I are both still giddy with excitement. Neither of us wants the night to end, which is how we always feel. Charlie pulls off an unfamiliar exit well before we're back in Purdue. Where are we going? I'm resting my head on his shoulder, feeling at home. Like somehow, everything is right in the world despite everything that's wrong in mine.
I want to show you somewhere I come to think sometimes, he tells me.
The truck climbs higher and higher until Charlie pulls over and cuts the engine. He gets out of the cab and comes around to my side, opening the door and offering me a hand. He points at the sky. I look up and gasp. It's like a million stars are staring back at us. Like this overlook is the doorway to heaven itself. We climb into the back. He's got blankets and pillows and a thermos of hot chocolate waiting there. He pours us each a cup, puts on lids, and hands one to me. I snuggle into his arms. I take a sip and point up at a star. Can you name that one?
That's Charlinium, he says with a laugh, because it's really huge and powerful.
I roll my eyes at him and point to another.
That one's Burritorium, because it's in the shape of a burrito.
That's Procyon, silly, I tell him. 11 light years away. He turns to look at me.
So we were about 7 when that light was made?
I nod. Good math. That was also when you got your first skateboard, right? I watch Charlie's eyes grow wide.
How did you know that?
I decide I might as well tell him the truth. The whole truth this time. We don't have much time left together. Charlie, that night when we met at the train station, I already knew you. I can't tell if he's weirded out or creeped out or what. His face is in total neutral, like I just told him it was going to rain tomorrow or something equally benign.
What do you mean?
I stare up at the sky. In elementary school, you walked past my window every morning at dawn on your way to swim practice. I sneak a sideways glance at Charlie. He doesn't look scared, so I keep going. In 3rd grade, you started skateboarding. In 6th grade, you wore a Ken Griffey Jr. jersey every day for like a month. In 9th grade, you buzzed your hair off. I waited for you. It was the best part of my day. So by the time we met, you were already a part of my life. I finish my confession and hold my breath. Charlie doesn't say anything for a while. I don't press him either, because I understand what I just put out there is a lot to absorb. Finally, he comes out with this.
I can't believe you still liked me after you saw that buzz cut.
I giggle. Leave it to Charlie to make me laugh at a time like this. To not judge me, but simply to love all that I do and am. Even when I'm admitting to being the world's most unlikely stalker.
I just wish I'd looked up, he says. Then I could have been with you this whole time.
He doesn't realize what I've known all along. He's always been there with me. You were, I tell him. Then I take a big breath and jump off into the deep end. I love you, Charlie. He touches my face, looks into my eyes. His are filled with tears, but happy ones. I love you too. He pulls me to him. And I fall into his kiss. We kiss for every star in the sky. We kiss for every kiss we missed in the past, and every kiss we'll miss in the future. I know my nights are getting numbered. I know my days are getting short. I need to seize every moment I have left. I hang on to Charlie for dear life. Chapter 24. We're playing cards at my house a few weeks later.
I'm definitely more tired, shakier, more fragile than before. The truth is, my grip is so weak, I can barely keep my hand hidden from the rest of the players. Charlie, Garver, Morgan, Dad. And, oh yeah, Dr. Fleming, or Jessica, as Dad now calls her. It's weird, but great. When she first started checking up on me at home every few days, I felt like I was being a huge burden. I know how busy Dr. Fleming's practice is, and how many kids other than me need attending to. But it quickly became apparent that Dad was starting to look forward to her coming over, in more than just a doctor's, patient's father kind of way. He'd put on his best shirt and shoes, comb his hair just so. I noticed before he did. "You like her," I finally told him.
"What? I don't know what you're talking about,"
he replied, a blush creeping onto his cheeks. "You know exactly what I'm talking about," I said. "And guess what? I approve, so go for it." Dad somehow found the courage to ask Dr. Fleming, Jessica, out to dinner. And she's been kind of a fixture at our house since then. Dad's super happy he didn't have to take a chance on one of the randos from the dating site. I'm happy I'll be leaving him in good hands. Dr. Fleming has taken great care of me all these years. I'm confident she'll take just as good care of Dad for me once I'm gone. The terror that once came with thoughts like that is pretty much gone now, too. And it's like the way it was with Zoe. Once I let go of the fear, knowing I'm going to die soon has lost its power over me, too. I'm determined to live every second I have left to the fullest for however long that might be. Everything and everyone is going to be okay. I just know it. I wouldn't be able to let go when the time comes otherwise. Charlie sees me struggling and holds his hand out like a makeshift card holder. I tuck my cards into his palm. "I'll call," I say with a smile, knowing I'm about to kick everyone's booty with this one. Morgan reaches across the table and sweeps my chips into the center for me. I flip my cards over from Charlie's hand. "Full house, boom, aces over jacks." Everybody groans. Jessica shakes her head and throws down her junk hand. "I had only one pair," she says, "and they were twos. I'm out of chips." Morgan sweeps the entire pot over to me. "You are officially banned from my casino, Katie." The six of us reconvene every couple of nights for the next few weeks. We play cards, watch movies, ask one another questions from my old Would You Rather book, and generally just have a good time. It's awesome to see my dad so relaxed in having someone other than me to hang out with, even though I'm not quite sure what his deal is with Jessica. And so, one night after everyone's gone home, and it's just my dad and me in front of the TV, I get up the courage to ask him, "So, are you guys hooking up, or is she friend-zoning you?" My dad gives me a curious look.
"I don't even know what language you're speaking, Katie."
I laugh and try again. "Are you guys romantically involved, or just friends, or what?"
"What?" he says.
"You heard me," I tell him, trying to be stern.
"I really, really want to know."
"Your dying daughter deserves an answer."
"And I told you, my answer is what?"
he says.
"As in, I don't have an answer yet, Katie. She's just coming off a divorce. I haven't dated in 20 years. So we're taking it slowly, seeing what happens."
My mouth falls open. "Are you trying to tell me you haven't even kissed her yet? 3 weeks of dates and she doesn't even merit a peck goodnight?" My dad's cheeks turn light pink.
"I'm being a gentleman."
Like Nike says, just do it, I tell him, closing my eyes. I'm tired all the time lately. I like her, Dad. You like her. I want you to be happy. Mom would want you to be happy. Before I nod off, I hear him say,
You know what? She kind of reminds me of your mom. Maybe you're right.
A few days later, Morgan, Dad, and I are hanging out watching a baseball game. I'm lying on the couch covered in my favorite blanket, my feet draped over Morgan's legs. My dad sits on the armrest, stroking my hair. Ever since my shakiness got more pronounced, and it's gotten hard to swallow, he won't leave my side. He's even set up a blow-up mattress next to my bed, in case I need something when I'm sleeping, which is more and more often these days. During the seventh inning stretch, Charlie burst through the door full of energy.
Laptop! I need a laptop!
He hoots. My dad points to the dining room table, where he was working earlier. Charlie pauses to kiss the top of my head, then runs to get it. He plops down on the floor in front of the couch and starts typing.
Check this out.
He puts the laptop on the coffee table so we can all see what's gotten him so hyped up. He hits the return key with a flourish. On comes a YouTube video. It's of me, singing Charlie's song at the recording studio. I have to admit, I sound good. Really, really good. I even look pretty good, too. Morgan gasps. Oh my God! What is this? You're amazing, Katie! Charlie grins and shrugs.
It's footage from a recording session.
My pulse quickens, and I feel brighter, lighter than I have in days.
You sound incredible, my dad tells me. You're so beautiful, Katie. You always have been, inside and out.
I ignore how cheesy that sounds and give him a smile.
Look at these comments, Morgan exclaims. I'm obsessed with this. I love her voice. She's so hot. Whoops, sorry, Mr. P.
I am smiling so hard now, I feel like my face might explode from happiness.
Wait, what's that one?
It's the only comment out of like a zillion that has a thumbs down.
Oh, that's nothing, Morgan says as she tries to scroll by it.
I reach out to stop her. I have to get used to critics if my songs are going to be out there for everyone to hear, I say. I can handle it. Every singer I've ever loved has haters, too.
Fine, Morgan says with a sigh.
It says, people only like this song because they feel sorry for the dying girl singing it,
which you know is total bullshit, right, Katie?
Sorry for swearing, Mr. P, but it's true. Despite what I said about wanting to hear the negative feedback, it still feels like a punch in the gut. I wonder if it's true. Are people only listening to my song because they pity me? How would they even know I was a dying girl to begin with?
Please, Charlie says. Did you see the screen name of who wrote that?
I shake my head. Morgan scrolls back to it, then grins and shows it to me. Too lit for you. I think back to where I've seen it before. Right. Zoe's license plate.
Ha! That flaming crotch rot just won't give it up, will she?
Morgan crows.
Obviously, you can disregard anything she has to say, Katie. She's just jealous.
Yeah, and look what else is happening,
Charlie says, excitement lighting up his eyes. He clicks a link on the side and opens a new video. It's a webcam video of a teenage girl playing guitar in her bedroom. She starts strumming, then singing.
Charlie's song!
I look at my dad in amazement. Charlie clicks another link. This is of a different girl reinterpreting the tune from behind a keyboard. Another link. There's a guy sitting on a windowsill singing it a cappella. Look at how many people you've touched, Charlie says, an urgency in his voice that I understand all too well. He means, touched before, I can't touch anyone anymore. Now the whole world can hear you. I reach out slowly and painfully to him. He grabs my hand and kisses it. He holds it tightly. He won't let go. I need to run over to the marina, Katie, he tells me. But I will be back in an hour or so.
I want to see this Beyoncé-worthy yacht you've been cleaning all summer, Morgan tells him.
I'm afraid you're going to miss your chance, Charlie tells her. Mr. Jones is sailing off on vacation tomorrow. This is my last little checkup before he goes.
Ah, snap, Morgan says.
Charlie leans down close to me. I'll see you soon, okay? Sure, I say. He starts to walk to the door, and something in me tells me I should follow. I have a gut feeling that I might not be here when he gets back. I decide I don't want to just lie here on this couch waiting to die. I want to go on that sunset sail Charlie and I talked about. I want to be in control of how my story ends. Wait, I say. It comes out forcefully, and everyone turns to look at me. I want to go with him, I say.
Go where, sweetie?
My dad asks, concern all over his face. I struggle to push myself up to a sitting position. I want to go with Charlie, on the boat, now. I won't let XP call the shots anymore. It's not over until I say it's over. And I guess what I'm saying is, I'm ready. It's like everyone in the room freezes. Morgan looks at my dad. I can't tell if she's hoping he'll say yes or no. Charlie stops, waiting for an answer. My dad looks deep in thought.
Maybe it would be better if you just lie down a little longer, he finally says.
But I'm growing weaker every day, every hour, every minute. Today is my last chance. I know it. I probably won't have a tomorrow, even if I don't go. It's okay, Dad, I assure him. I want to. My father stares back at me, unblinking. I know he wasn't prepared for this. Me making one last stand for independence and freedom? Well, he's just going to have to deal with it. I really want to, I insist. We all know what it means if I go. But I'm okay with it. Really, I am. I have to be. There's no other choice. Please, I say. My dad takes a big swallow, closes his eyes, finally nods yes. Chapter 25. Charlie is waiting for me on the boat. I'm standing on the dock with my dad and Morgan, telling her it's okay to cry. She's frantically trying to wipe away her tears. I know she's mad at herself for not being stoic in this moment, but I'm really okay with her showing her true feelings. Because I feel it too. I don't want to leave her. She's never left me, not once, even when all the other kids did. I hope she doesn't see my last wish as a betrayal of our friendship.
Does it hurt? My dad asks.
I'm not sure if he means the sun or his grip around me, but neither does. Not really. I lower the hood on my sweatshirt and tilt my face up to the sun, holding my arms out wide. The light washes over me. I feel truly at peace.
It feels amazing. It feels better than I even imagined. I turn to face Morgan. I love you so much. She pulls me into a fierce hug.
Everyone sucks compared to you. I'm screwed for life. You've ruined me.
Well, you saved me, I tell her. Thanks for not believing Zoe when she said I was a vampire. Morgan starts laughing through her tears.
That whore. I told you she is the actual devil. I would never have turned on you.
I shake my head and smile at her. And you never did. And I never will. Don't I know it? I turn to face my dad. I reach out for his hand. I'm staring at him, trying to memorize his face. Every line, every curve, every whisker. I have him to thank for my life, for everything I love and cherish. Promise, you'll let yourself be happy? I can only leave him and get on this boat now if I know he'll take care of himself after I'm gone. To love and be loved again. Follow his passions to the farthest corners of the earth with someone special by his side, I hope. Maybe Jessica is the one? And if not, someone deserving of the incredible man he is. Dad nods, his face full of emotion.
I promise.
We hug each other tightly. I want to bottle up everything we've been and done for each other and spread it all over the entire planet. Let the world experience what pure goodness feels like.
I don't know how the universe works, Katie,
my dad says, his voice choked with tears.
But thank you for choosing me to be your dad. I've truly loved every second of it.
I laugh. I'm not sure that's how it works, but right back at you, I say. I love you.
Love you more,
my dad tells me. I shake my head and smile at him. Not possible. I turn toward Charlie, who's waiting to help me onto the boat. I wave to my dad and Morgan.
My first boat ride,
I say, trying to lighten the moment.
I'll be right here, on the dock, waiting for you, okay?
Dad calls out to me. I nod. I know you will. Charlie has one arm wrapped tightly around me as he steers with the other. He looks gorgeous, strong, in control. He's everything I ever imagined he'd be and more. My legs buckle under me. I'm so tired. He stares down at me and smiles.
I've got you. Don't worry.
I gaze out at the horizon, breathing in the beautiful daytime air, letting myself bask in it, in the sun. It's a mix of colors I've never seen before, a cool blue that fades into purple, which blends into a fiery orange, and all of it is slowly dropping into the edge of the water. It feels like it's just for me. I turn to face Charlie. I've waited my whole life to feel like this. He kisses me, and I taste the salt of his tears.
Me too,
he says. Okay, Katie. Time for us to go back in. I open my eyes and see that my mom is playing her guitar as she says this. The sun is setting behind her, and it's like the sky is on fire. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Can't we stay here forever? I ask. Forever, huh? That's a pretty long time. I know, I say, and reach out to strum the guitar along with her. Well, let me ask you this. Are you having fun right now? I nod. Then now
is all that matters. Epilogue.
Hey, Charlie. I'm sorry I missed you on your way out of town. I must have been out getting supplies for my big trip, or shots. It's been a while since I've taken a trip where you need shots, and let me tell you, I did not miss that part. Anyhow, I hope Berkeley's treating you well. And as for your note of apology, well, that's just horseshit. It was nobody's fault, and certainly not yours for keeping her out too late that night. I don't want you ever thinking that, and she wouldn't want it either. We knew from when she was young that every day was a gift. Besides, I should thank you. All I ever wanted was for my girl to be happy. You made her very happy, Charlie. And it's nice knowing there's one more person out there who knows how incredible Katie was. One more person out there who loves her. Katie wanted you to have her notebook. She told me to tell you that you stole it so many times, you might as well keep it. She also told me to tell you to read the last page first. Oh, and did you hear Katie's song on the radio? Well, it's your song, I guess. Named for you, anyway. Morgan called me the other day and said she and Garver heard it in the car. My girl on the radio. Not that I ever doubted she could make it. Take care, Charlie, and don't be a stranger. Jack Price.
Dear Charlie, I've always been more comfortable writing song lyrics than actual sentences. At least when I'm writing, I can't ramble, no matter how nervous I am. There's no way I can articulate what you've meant to me since that moment we first saw each other, or the joy you brought me since I first saw you outside my window. You gave me the world. You taught me to live. Even though our time together was short, the stars have been burning for every moment of it, and the light from those moments will be shining down for the next 1,000 years. I hope that somehow I'll be able to look down and see you, Charlie, to glimpse all of the incredible moments waiting for you. And I hope that you'll occasionally think to look up and remember all of the light we made together. Amor Winket Omnia. I love you, Charlie Reed. About XP. Xeroderma pigmentosum, or XP for short, is an inherited disease that affects only 1 in 1,000,000 people in the United States and Europe. In some other countries and regions of the world, such as Japan and North Africa, it happens more often, but is still rare. People with XP have an extreme sensitivity to ultraviolet rays and get severely burned after just a few minutes in the sun. The DNA damage this causes can't be undone. It just keeps building over time. Red and blistered skin, like the sunburns most of us have experienced, are the least of it. Having this rare condition also means having a 2,000 times higher risk for getting skin cancer. People with XP can also suffer from neurological complications, including loss of eyesight, hearing, and coordination, problems walking, moving, and swallowing, mental confusion, and seizures. XP is normally diagnosed in early childhood. With extreme vigilance, always staying indoors with all the sunlight blocked out and wearing protective clothing, sunscreen, sunglasses, and a face shield when going out in the daylight can't be avoided. People with XP can have a normal lifespan, but when these precautions fail, there can be devastating consequences. In Midnight Sun, we've tried to be as realistic as possible in depicting what it's like to live with XP. Still, it's fiction. And for the sake of telling this love story, we've had to take some liberties. For example, it's unclear whether the amount of sun exposure Katie gets from staying out too late with Charlie
would have triggered her neurological problems, and her symptoms likely progressed much more quickly than they would in real life. To learn more about XP, check the links in your PDF. This has been a Hachette audio production of Midnight Sun, written by Trish Cook, read by Taylor Meskimen, produced by Dennis Kao, directed by John Kovarik, post-production by Mike Sandoval and Jeremy Wesley, production supervised by Elise Green. Midnight Sun is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by Full Fathom 5 and Midnight Sun, LLC. Audio production copyright 2018, Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.